Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And a very warm welcome. This is the Motormouth podcast with myself, Harry Benjamin, and Tim Sylvie, where in each show we sit down with a figure from the world of motorsport and dive into how exactly they ended up where they are now. F1 champions, team principals, Formula E and touring car stars. If there's anyone with a story to tell, they'll usually tell it right here. Motormouth is an app and website where you can catch up with all the latest F1 gossip at motormouth.club and view live timings across a race weekend with our app. We're also proud to be partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, helping to raise awareness and help find a cure through events like our annual karting race, where you can go head-to-head against professional drivers, all to raise vital funds. For more info, check out motormouthkartrace.com. This podcast is brought to you by F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport, and let's face it, any chance to get close to Formula One, we're all over it. Enjoy the very best race tickets and track hospitality, first-class hotels and unprecedented access you simply cannot get anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 experience, visit f1experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 Experiences package by using the code MM11F1E when checking out online. So, what are you waiting for? Experience the 2022 F1 season firsthand with exclusive access courtesy of F1 Experiences. Get booking today at f1experiences.com.
Hi, I'm Tim Sylvie, and today we're joined by one of the top people in the Formula E paddock who hails from Etterbeek in Belgium. I hope I've said that correctly, which is one of the 19 municipalities of the Brussels region and is a bilingual area. 35% of its inhabitants are of foreign origin, which means people can often struggle to integrate with daily life in terms of communication. So, Harry Benjamin, can you tell me what languages they officially speak in Etterbeek when addressing the public?
Languages?
Correct.
Multiple. So, isn't that just the languages they speak in Belgium?
Which is?
So French,
mm-hmm.
Flemish.
Ah, now you see, I've got Dutch and French.
Oh, well, Dutch was going to be my third one, but I'm pretty sure, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure Flemish is one.
Well, my research has thrown up Dutch and French, but a recent change in policy has led to language inclusivity in this area, so that all meetings conducted will be in French, Dutch and English, giving people the chance to choose what language feel most comfortable speaking. But in addition to that, they're actually having discussions to make English an official language of Brussels, so the city can claim its role as the capital of Europe. So it's a fully multilingual cultural melting pot. So there you are.
Wow, what a start to the show, I must say. A really, really divergent start.
You're welcome, listeners. Now, listen, you've had a busy old couple of weeks, and you got a bit of a call up to do some work with the e-scooter championship. How'd it go?
Yes, well, it is somewhat relevant. Of course, one of the co-founders, Lucas Degrassi, along with Alex Wirtz as well, some names you might recognise there, for the ESC, the e-scooter championship, which had its first round last weekend at the time of recording in London at Printworks, which is a gigantic venue. And it's all electric scooter racing, essentially. And it's great. It's really fun. It's a whole event type thing, really. It's a bit, it reminded me sort of what you might, it's like Olympics crossed with a bit of a party, really. All the riders are sort of former Olympians or professional BMX riders or skateboarders, snowboarders. Hulkenberg's involved with the team. Carlin have got a team.
Anthony Joshua, the boxer.
Anthony Joshua's got a team. That, you know, it's a really high caliber of people involved. And I think it went really well for her. For a brand new, you know, look back to when Formula E had its first ever race. This was, you know, a first ever start for a whole new type of sport.
Yeah.
I think it was a really really great start for it. So it was nice to play a very small part.
Oh, look, great. Well, congrats. Right, well, should we introduce today's guest?
I think so.
So today we're joined by Jerome D'Ambrosio. Born in 1985, he started his career racing karts aged 8 before moving up through the ranks of the likes of Renault 1.6 in Belgium, Formula Renault 2.0, Formula Masters GP2, and of course Formula 1, where he made 20 race appearances for Virgin Racing, and he was also there with Lotus F1. He hopped across to Formula E for the opening season for Dragon Racing before a stint with Mahindra, and finally finding himself as team principal with Rocket Venturi Racing alongside CEO Susie Wolf. We're here to talk about his life, career, thoughts and opinions. Jerome, a very, very warm welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you.
Jerome.
I have a question for you, because you spoke about languages in the beginning in Brussels.
Yeah.
You know, there's another language in Belgium.
Is it Flemish?
On top of all the languages that you mentioned, there's another language in Belgium.
Hold on. So we've got French, we've got Dutch. Flemish is in there somewhere.
You mean Dutch, German?
Oh, no. So you're getting into the weeds now. So there's Dutch, German?
We have three official languages in Belgium. Flemish, French, and German.
Oh, so I didn't know the German.
So there's no Dutch?
Dutch is Flemish.
Dutch is... Oh, I'm so confused now. So we've got Flemish, which is the Dutch. Okay, so Harry, you were right. I was right. We've got the Flemish / Dutch, German,
and French.
And soon, potentially, English as another official language.
Here you go.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? You learn something new every day.
Blimey.
Thank you, Jerome, for educating us there. Well, where are you at the moment? You're not in Belgium. You're surrounded, for those who can't see, by multiple cacti. Whereabouts are you at the moment?
I'm actually in Monaco. I haven't lived in Belgium for a while. I moved away when I was 18, and now I've been for the last seven, eight years in Monaco, and I'm actually right now in the Rocket Venturi offices.
Actually, do you know, I was there a couple of weeks ago, actually, in the Rocket Venturi offices, and they're amazing. They've got, we had an interview with the Land Speed record team at Bloodhound Team. And they have, you guys, Jerome, have the equivalent of their basically rocket ship of a high-speed car in your lobby in the offices there, the electric Land Speed car, which is a pretty impressive thing.
That's right, the VBB3, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Over 500 something kilometers per hour back in 2016, I think.
Yeah.
Very impressive. What Gildo has built, has done with the Land Speed records over the years is pretty astonishing, because he got involved into that way, way before it was mainstream.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And the final mention of Monaco when I was there, the reason I was there, Harry, was to do some work with one of Rocket Venturi's sponsors, Elite. So I'm going to do a plug, because I happen to have a bottle of Elite in my hand. Look at that. That is a big old bottle of vodka. So a little shout out to one of your sponsors, just to make Damien happy, who's the CEO of Elite. There we go, Damien. There's your bottle of Elite vodka.
He's not even being paid for that. Unbelievable.
No, that's a freebie.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's because it's the best vodka around.
There you go.
It is. cheers to that, everybody. Well, let's focus on, clearly you've had a really wide and varied career so far, Jerome, from starting obviously as a, you know, karting racing driver, making your way up through the ranks to transitioning from Formula One to, you know, GTs and now Formula E as a driver and in this new role. There's a lot to cover. But I suppose you know, if we start with Formula One, shall we? You know, you were there with Virgin Racing. Can you tell us what that step up was like when you made it onto the grids, and then the transition away from F1, and how you dealt with that period of your life?
The feeling, you know, when you sign in Formula One, regardless which team you sign for, it's really a life achievement for a young race car driver. And that was the case for me back in the days. I remember perfectly, it was right before Christmas. We signed the contract with Virgin, and the emotion was incredible. Then I remember the first Grand Prix, just being there in Melbourne on the grid, you know, with all the other guys, big names. And one of them was Michael Schumacher was driving that year. The first Grand Prix I ever went to see in Formula One was, unfortunately, was Imola 94. And he was on the grid at that time. And I remember my dad calling me after Melbourne saying, it's crazy. We were in Imola 94. You know, Schumacher was driving there. Michael was driving there. And now you're next to him on the grid. It was, you know, out of a different world. But then, you know, obviously the instinct of the racing driver kicks in, and you want performance. And so just being there is not good enough. So I think I really had very highs during that season in Formula One, just because there were some milestones of achieving certain things as a race car driver, some performance against my teammate that were quite encouraging. But then it's not sustainable. It's not enough to sustainably remain in Formula One. And unfortunately for me, I mean, that was the end of the experience. I had one more Grand Prix with Lotus Renault to replace Grosjean in 2012. And looking back at it, it was the best experience. I'm so grateful for having done that. At the same time, the exit was actually really difficult in the beginning to acknowledge that I wasn't going to move up and be in a midfield or top team and continue my progression in my career, and with the aim to be to winning races and be fighting at the front in Formula One. You digest that as a driver. But then in the end, I went away. I did a bit of a stint in GTs, which I didn't particularly enjoy, but for which I was very underprepared. I did only 5 races. But straight away, Formula E came around the corner. And actually, it was interesting because I signed in Formula E, and right when I signed in Formula E and right after Beijing, I think it was, which was the first race in September, I had an opportunity to do some work and to potentially go and do a Grand Prix in Formula One for one of the smallest team. And in the end, I decided back in that, at that point, that there was going to be no future to do a one-off with that team. It was Formula One, but I would have rather just fully focus on Formula E and build my career in that as a professional race car driver, because I believed in the project. So that's really the cutoff moment where I realized as a race car driver, okay, I turned the page on Formula One. It was great. It was an amazing experience. It's a life achievement just to have been there. But I want to compete. I want to be at the front. I want to be able to do things and you know, to see a future in what I'm doing. And that's when, you know, my whole life 100% shifted on Formula E. And that's what I focused on. And why did I focus on Formula E? Because it ticked all the boxes. When I left Formula One, I look, okay, I'm not going to be a Formula One driver. That's not going to work for me. So I want to be a race car driver. What else is there around? You have IndyCar, you have Le Mans, you have Formula E back in, just starting. And I thought Formula E is touching points that makes that championship more relevant than any other series to the current situation in the world at the time, focusing on sustainability, on having to find greener technologies, on finding new ways to engage with fans. And so it ticked a few boxes that made me believe that could be the next series, something that could really work. And being part of an ecosystem that works, that makes sense, means that as a driver, if you're performing, then you have the chance to be in that ecosystem on merits and because you're performing. And that's the route I took, and I never looked back since.
It was a very brave move to make at that time, because although there was a transition to green energy and sustainability, it was still relatively new in terms of motorsports. A very brave move. But where does Formula One sit for you in the motorsport landscape now? I mean, perhaps looking a bit more longer term, what's the future for F1? Are they going green quickly enough? Do they need to? You know, where's it going to sit in 10 or 15 years' time?
I mean, it's a very interesting question, and everybody asks themselves that question, but I don't think that way. I think as Formula E, we need to focus on ourselves. Formula One's doing great. Formula One's been the pinnacle of motorsport for the last 7 years, and that's where it stands at the moment. It's provided some great racing, an amazing season last year, still providing great events and great racing this year, and that's great. For sure, there's a transition, technological transition towards greener technologies that will have to happen in the future. But a lot of things can happen in a few years, in 5, 10, let alone 15 years. So I don't want to think too far ahead in that respect. And I think Formula E and the championship, we need to just focus on ourselves. And people have a natural tendency of comparing Formula One and Formula E and who's going to last and who's going to be the most relevant in 10 years, 15 years. I just don't think that way, because there's so many things that can happen in the meantime that can shift, the whole situation in one direction or the other. So Formula E needs to focus on itself. We have a great product. We have great values. We have, we have a technology that is very relevant on the very long term. And we need to just try to continue to grow what we're doing. And at the moment, Formula One, you're asking me, where does it sit? I think it's the pinnacle of racing, and it's been for the last 7 years.
And I suppose they're still doing a lot of very interesting stuff that is trickling down to our road cars that makes them incredibly efficient. And, they're not like the big V8s and V10s of years gone by, pumping pollutants into the atmosphere. And I think I read the Formula One sustainability charter, and it was something like only 0.7% of the pollution or the carbon that they produce every year is actually from the cars themselves. So, as a race series, they're heading in the right direction. You touched on the technology in Formula E there. The cars have obviously come a long way, not just in terms of their technology, but the way they look. The Gen 1 cars that we were familiar with back in the day, into the Gen 2 cars that we see today, which are quite sort of aggressive, interesting looking cars. And we had in Monaco the release of the Gen 3 car. Just talk us through the technology developments that have happened in the different generations of car. And I'm very keen to get your honest opinion on the Gen 3.
Formula E has made, and this is where Formula E compared to any other racing series at this level, at the world championship level, is so relevant in that space of the technology of the future for road cars, because that we know that's where it's going. It's going electric. The world is going electric in terms of mobility, and especially road road cars mobility. So Formula E has made, I think, big leap forwards between generation. I think, but the first one is actually within the first generation of Formula E car. The first car was, one car for everybody with one motor, five you still had gearbox and five gears and so on, and not necessarily very efficient. We've made a huge step in motor and gearbox efficiency throughout the first generation. That was the biggest evolution, I think, during that first generation. Then we made a huge step as well, going from two cars to one car with a better battery on the Gen 2. That was, I think, an important step for Formula E, because we had to start somewhere, and this two car championship, two car race, in the beginning, some people were saying, well, it's just showing that EVs are not, you know, not ready enough to go the distance. That will increase range anxiety. In the end, again, we had to start somewhere. For the show, it was actually quite exciting. For drivers, it was very weird to have to jump from one car to the next. But then that was, as much as this might have posed some challenges in the beginning in the way we communicated, it offered a great opportunity to show how fast the technology was evolving when we moved to the Gen 2. And now jumping into Gen 3, we will recoup much more energy. We will recoup energy on the four wheels. The car is much more powerful, will be much lighter. And again, it just shows the progress of the technology. And then you can maybe specify more. What is your question in terms of, you asked me about Gen 3, my opinion on it. I think it's a technological leap forward. It's a huge step. The car will be much faster. It's the regen numbers are quite impressive. And I love that. Maybe you're coming from the angle of the design, which obviously there's been talks about. But in the end, where I come from when it comes to design is just a subjective element. And I like it. You might not like it. Some other people might not like it. In general, humans don't like change. You've all had your latest version of Facebook and your latest version of Instagram. And 99% of the people at first hate it because it's change and we get comfortable with what we know. It's just part of humankind. And so there's a new radical design that's coming up and it sparks a debate. But I think, you know, I mean, from my perspective, I like the fact that it's different. There is a debate. But the design aspect of things, people will get used to it. Then a Gen 4 is going to come out and some people are going to say, oh my God, it's great. Some people are going to say, oh my God, it's ugly. I don't think the debate is really necessarily around that. I think that's very subjective. I think what we need to focus on is the technology itself and the leap forward that you were saying that we're doing, because that's where Formula E is also different, is in the technology and technology of the future. And that's where the focus should be.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsports. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first-class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including track tours, pit lane walks, VIP hospitality, and loads more. It really is the closest you can get to Formula One, and Motormouth listeners can save 5% on your next F1 Experiences package by using the code MM11F1E when booking online at f1experiences.com.
And that's a very good point, actually. And design aside, I love the fact with Formula E, you can literally, the timeline is so visual and you can see how far that technology has progressed just by looking at the different generation of cars and how far it's actually come. So people forget how short a space of time it's been. Yeah. You know, F1 be going for 70 plus years now, and then formally not even reached a decade yet. It's, you know, it's amazing how much it's gone through its transition. That's the car side. You yourself, though, have gone through the steps from being, well, part of a fairly unique group now, I would think, actually, of one of the first drivers in that Gen 1 car, then progressing to Gen 2, and then one of the first to make the jump from driver to management. When did you know that you wanted to go into the management side of things?
It's a nice way to say I'm a dinosaur of a...
a unique selection of groups. Unique selection.
Again, when I touched on my transition from Formula 1 to Formula E and me wanting to always want to do things where I can see a perspective, where I can see growth. And that's part of what I enjoy so much in what I've done as a race car driver, what I do now. I like to put myself in, you know, not necessarily comfortable situations, actually very uncomfortable situations, and I have to, you know, find my way out of them, because I find that's the way to grow. And to what I mean by uncomfortable situation is put myself into very competitive environments, force myself to have to learn new things and to evolve as a person. And that's one of the things I enjoy the most about competition and what I've done. And that was true as a race car driver, and that is true now as a team principal. So what happened is that at the end of season six, it was the end of my contract with Mahindra, which wasn't going to go ahead for further seasons. And the options I had on the table was, well, I had one option on the table, which wasn't, let's say, wasn't the best option. It was for a team that was not going to allow me to fight at the front. It was, and that's something that was an important element for me in terms of being able to see myself continue to grow. If you're fighting in the midfield to the front and then you sign with a team that...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know, won't allow you to do that. It really feels like a step backwards. And I've always told myself in my career, the day I feel my career is going downhill rather than uphill, I will have to have the discipline to stop, because I'll be young. I'll be 35, 38, whatever it is. And life is short and there's no time to lose. And I didn't want to just be there, just to do another year or just to hang on into something which I'm not really relevant anymore to and for. And so that was my reasoning. And after the last race in Berlin, I looked at what were the options. As I said, it was one, not great. I sat down with my wife. I took two, 3 weeks off, completely disconnected from racing in the mountains. And during that period of time, I said, okay, that's it. Let's call it a day. And I had nothing. I had nothing when I took that decision. But I realized also that if I was going to move on, I couldn't play both sides. I had to just decide and go for something new if that's what I felt like. And, you know, with the support, it's a big decision. With the support of my wife, I took that decision and I went for it. And that was mid-September, and mid-October I was with Venturi.
And it's going incredibly well. I mean, we've just come off the back at the time of recording. Where are we? 18th of May. At the time of recording now, you've had a very, very successful weekend in Berlin. Position yourselves very nicely in the championship. You've got to be pretty pleased with the way things are shaping up this season.
Yes, I mean, it's the team has done an amazing job. And it's really something that I've started throughout last year. We've had our first... We made a big step last year, I think, going in after Monaco. I think it was going to Puebla. And since then, the team has done, of course, we haven't won every race. We've not always been on the podium. But in terms of execution and trying to get getting the best out of the package, I think the guys have just continuously worked and improved bits by bits. And we got now, just as you say, coming back from Berlin, which we've done our best doubleheader race since the inception of the team. We scored 62 points. Edo finished first and second. Lucas finished fourth in race two. And I'm pretty convinced we'd have done a top five if it wasn't for a slow puncture in race one. So it's great, but it's Formula E at the same time. So as we speak, 18th of May, we are also starting the preparation for Jakarta. And you have to be very humble in this championship, because you have to enjoy the highs and the Berlin races, but you also have to realize that it's not because you won the previous race that you're going to necessarily have a great one. You figured everything out and it's going to be the case for the next one. You're in a championship where there's not a strong hierarchy. difference between teams are within the 10th, especially in qualifying. And so we need to make sure that we continue to work and try to continue to improve ourselves and understand why we performed and try to replicate that the next race, but knowing that it's definitely not a given. So that's a particularity, I think, of the championship. And that's something that's great in Formula E, is that you don't know it's going to be one of two teams who's going to win the next race, which makes it very exciting.
You've got two very exciting and impressive drivers, as you say, Eden Mortara and Lucas Degrassi as well. I'm imagining the answer is yes, but then again, I don't know. Because you've been a driver, now switching to team principal, does that make the relationship when you're dealing with your own drivers better, because you sort of know what they're feeling and where they're coming from?
I think it definitely helps me to understand what a driver might feel in certain situations and why a driver might react in certain ways. Although I say might, because every human being is different. And so you have to take that, be very careful with generalities. But yes, I think it does help me. Having said that, you're speaking about two drivers with whom I've competed for the last 20 plus year. We've known each other since go-karting. So it's a particular relationship because we were friends and colleagues, and now we have a different relationship. We have a different role. I have my own responsibilities that they have theirs as race car drivers. And so I think there will be in the future the drivers that will come through the ranks that I will see evolving, being 20, 22, 25, at that age, which will always have known me as a team principal, and I will have probably one type of relationship with those drivers. At the moment, I'm still in a very particular dynamic with the drivers, again, because we've had a relationship for 20 years that was one relationship, and I need to find my place now, and they need to find their place in a dynamic which is very different. But both Edo and Lucas are very intelligent drivers, And we're finding that dynamic is working well. But again, it's different. It's not only because the dynamic here that's at play with these two guys in particular, it's a bit different than just, oh, they're drivers, you were a driver, so it must be very straightforward for you guys to understand one another.
It's funny, Lucas is an interesting guy to interview. He's a very deep thinker, isn't he? Like you ask him something and he kind of pauses for 3 or 4 seconds and really thinks about what he's going to say. Quite an interesting character and someone we actually need to get on the show. We've had Edo already and he was great. Now, you've obviously got a counterpart, your CEO, Susie Wolf. You've got some great people in the team who are female, the likes of Lizzie Brooks, who we know, who helped set this up, and many others. And I know that diversity and inclusion, empowerment, equality are all important areas for you. Tell us a little bit more about the ethos that you're trying to get into the race team.
I think what we're trying to do here is to create an environment where really people can strive. There's nothing more, I think, exciting for management to see the people in the company, extracting all the potential that they have and translating that into results. And you see that happening. You saw in Berlin, you were speaking about Berlin, a great group of people and finding the right solutions and really putting them in an environment to find those solutions. So for us, the environment that we create here is of the utmost importance, because that's where people can strive and can express themselves at their best. Diversity and inclusion is another very important point of that, and I think there's from my perspective there's two points to that. The first one, and we don't need to speak too long about it. It really is the right thing to do. At least this is what I believe. So that's one thing. But then the second point, which I think is very important, because again, for something to be sustainable on the long term and for people to really try to make a difference, it has to make sense. And for me, it does make sense. It does also, on a very rational point of view, performance-driven point of view, having a diverse workforce, people with different backgrounds, with different points of view, is essential for you to be open-minded, to look at problems in from multiple angles, not from, if you have four guys in a room or five guys in a room trying to solve a problem, and they're all from the same background, they all think the same way, and they all, you know, they're all going to come up with the same solution. They're all going to look at the problem in the same way. And maybe it's going to be the wrong way. There's a high chance it's going to be the wrong way. If you have a diverse bunch of people in that room looking at it, challenging each other's thoughts, this is when you really come up with interesting and different ideas on how to go about this problem. And I think this is where diversity and inclusion is not only the right thing to do from an ethical standpoint, it's the right thing to do also for companies and for us, because it brings real performance. We're a better team like that. And so this is where, you know, this is why it's so important for us to create that environment. You mentioned Lizzie, we've got Delphine, who's our team manager. I would say she's, you know, if I don't show up at a race for whatever reason, she's in command there. And you know, we have, again, we have people, and it's not only gender. It's not only gender diversity. It's diversity as in general, it's cultural diversities, and so on. And I think this is something that's important for those two reasons in my mind.
Mm. And going forward, that's such a good place to be at the moment, as well as there's continuing movements and efforts to be made there. On the sporting side of things, though, it's quite an exciting time too, because it's been announced that Rocket Venturi Racing will become Maserati from next season. That's really exciting. And to bring that brand back into a racing environment for the first time in a very long time, the exact amount of years, escapes my brain. But how did that transition come about? And you must be hugely excited by the prospect of Maserati.
Right, it's an incredible news for us as a team. It's an incredible news because it's an incredible brand, and that's exciting for us. It's exciting for the fans. It's exciting for the championship. It's a validation that the championship is continuing to grow. It's relevant, and this is why it's important to focus on what we do. We're doing some great things. We have some great brands that are joining the championship, and so being joined by them on that aspect and collaborating with them and becoming Maserati going forward, it's exciting. It's exciting also because they share our values and everything that we just spoke about before. That's usually important because we do things in a certain way. We're not afraid to do things that we want to do and do it in the way we want to do them. And so partnering with you mentioned Elite in the beginning of the podcast, Maserati, Kraft, HPE, all of our partners, EcoAlf, which is a great brand, sustainable brand, they have to share. We want them to share Luca. We want to share our with them our ethos and our values, because that allows us to do just great things together. So on that front, it's hugely exciting. On the other front of performance and on where the team is going and as the trajectory that the team has taken over the last few years and particularly the last few months in this really, I think, in this real up in performance in general, that will also assure us, because I'm convinced of the performance that the powertrain will bring us going forward. So this is why it's a great match. We're very excited to be working with them, and we've been talking to them for a long time. The first meeting we had with them was actually in the parking lot in Saudi, And it was very, as you can imagine, in a parking lot under 40 degrees sun, it was very informal. But we, you know, we started talking then. We never stopped talking and trying to explore how we could make this happen. And it worked in the end. So looking forward to that.
I love how business is done these days. You started chatting with them in a parking lot in Saudi Arabia, and and somehow the conversation continues until they are the team. It's amazing. But it shows that...
I think most things happen that way, actually.
Yeah. Well, wasn't Formula E on the back of a napkin or something like that? Isn't that the story that a gag tells everybody? That's how he came up with it.
It's amazing, but it shows the power of Formula E now, and the, like you say, the brands and OEMs that they're attracting, and we've seen recently McLaren announcing that they're participating as well. It feels like, Jerome, that Formula E is in very good health at the moment. I know there was a couple of manufacturers announced they were leaving, and everyone was like, oh God, it's the end of Formula E, which was never going to happen. There was always going to be that interest. You must be chuffed with the way the series is going with all these new manufacturers coming in.
Definitely. I mean, Formula E, it's no secret that it was not, those manufacturers that left wasn't great news for the championship. I think the COVID hit us pretty bad because of the city centers where we're racing and so on. But again, I think because we're relevant and because we're working with a technology that will be relevant on the very long term, because the way we interact with fans and everything that Formula E stands for, I think we're in a good place. And the fact that you've got manufacturers like Maserati, McLaren just announced that they're joining as well the championship last week in Berlin. It was a moment that was a bit difficult, but we're getting out of it and we're getting out of it stronger. I think with a Gen 3 car that's very exciting, and that's going to propose, I think, a very exciting races. I think it's great. It's great news. As I always say, we need to continue to focus on what we're doing. We've got some great, great things to look forward and I'm excited to be part of that story since the very beginning.
Well, the future, as you say, is very exciting in the world of Formula E. Now we are coming to the end. Time flies by. We've got a couple of, slightly random quick fire questions to throw at you. Do you have a hero, racing or otherwise?
No, I don't have a hero. I was never the type of, going crazy for an autograph or something, but there are people I really admire. And I think for me, admiring is to a certain extent even stronger because you really, look and you try to understand where these people are coming from. Mm. And in the world of racing, I admired Senna's commitment, passion. I admire also Jackie Stewart, which I got to know personally during my days in Formula One. A very intelligent person that manages his post Formula One career brilliantly. And there are some people I admire and I look up to, and definitely, but not only one for sure.
Do you have any hidden talents or skills that people might not know about?
It could be an instrument.
A hidden talent. Oh God! Something that is okay. No,
there's something. There is something here.
No. Look, I can juggle.
Oh, you juggle.
Yeah, but actually, most race car drivers can because it's part of this coordination.
Oh, that's true. Training. Yeah.
Oh, we'll take juggling. Okay. We'll take juggling.
We'll move on. We'll move on, shall we?
let's move on.
Is there anything, before we come to our final three questions, is there anything you are completely useless at, like just terrible?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of things. It's easier. You can find more things I'm useless at than I'm good at. Football, tennis, any sports like that. And just, I've got zero coordination. Really useless at that.
That's fair enough.
Fair enough.
Well, you've got to be good at something, and you're clearly good at business and driving cars very quickly. So I think most people would take that. Now, we've got a final three questions, which we're going to fire at you, which are brought to you by our partners at F1 Experiences. I'll kick off this week. Jerome, what's got you excited at this very moment in time?
The perspective of next race. That's something that, and that's the best thing about that I discovered in my new role, is that the excitement of going racing, the excitement you get when you get a victory, it's no less than when I was in the car. When Edo crossed that line and or does the pole position, I get the same thrill than I did in the car. So I'm excited about going to Jakarta and the opportunity that we have for the coming for the rest of the season.
How much of your success is down to luck and right place, right time, and how much is down to other things?
I think luck plays a role. I think you also do create your own luck. You know, I'll give you an example. The way I met the people that funded my GP2 career, I was at an event, stood next to someone, to a lady, and I mentioned, and there was these two politicians, Belgian politicians, presenting something. And my friend on the right says, "Do you know who these guys are?" And I said, "Look, I've got no clue." And the person next to me, that lady, is their PR. She starts laughing. She says, "Well, I'm doing a bad job." and I said, "I'm sorry, I didn't know." And we start speaking. And I say, and she says, "What do you do?" I'm a race car driver. "Oh, I know this guy you should meet. They're looking into getting involved with young drivers." And that's how I met the guys that funded my GP2 career. So,
wow.
So that's being at the right place at the right time, luck. But at the same time, and when I mean you create your own luck, that exact morning, I remember my dad, me not thinking that I was going to be useless as an event and I didn't want to go and so on. And my dad telling me, "Jerome, you got to just knock on 10,000 doors for one to open. You just got to go." And I had this argument and then I left and I said, "Okay, he's right. And I'm going to go." If I hadn't tried that 10,000 times, I might have not met that person. So this is where I think resilience and will to succeed and continuing to push, it's a combination of things, but that's essential. If you don't have that, it's just never going to work out.
Very good. And now our final question for you before we let you get on with your day. What are you scared of? And go as deep or as light as you like.
Oh, well, lightly, spiders, snakes. I hate spiders. I'm so scared. I'm scared of them. There's a lot of things that one is scared about. And I think being scared is actually very healthy. It's getting you to think and it's getting you not to be reckless. But you have to understand when a fear kicks in and you have to try to understand if it's rational or not. So fears are part of us and definitely part of me. The fear that I try to get the most under control is the fear of the future, of what's going to happen, because that is, I feel, can potentially be one of the most damaging thing in being in basically in the fact that it can paralyze you. And to give an example, it was scary to leave my career as a race car driver and to say, "I stop now," with nothing on the side. And at that point, I was leaving something which wasn't great, but which would have gotten me by. But to make the decision to go and say, "No, this is not the way I want to live my life. I want to do things that are meaningful, where I believe I can grow, where I can have a future and continue to evolve in the path of evolving as a human being," I had to make a decision. And I was afraid to make that decision. So this is where fear of what's going to happen, of the uncertainty, sometimes is relevant and you have to acknowledge that and you don't want to be reckless, but sometimes you have to also be bold and go for it and take a risk, because the reality is that we don't know what tomorrow is made of.
Very, very true. And yeah, I mean, you brilliantly answer and speak on a variety of subjects so brilliantly. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. Jerome D'Ambrosio, thank you so much for coming onto the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
If you've been listening to this and thinking, actually, I really want to go and experience a race for myself in person, why not do it in style at a Formula One Grand Prix thanks to F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences really is the closest you can get to the sport. Official ticket packages which include the best race tickets, first class hotels, travel and exclusive behind the scenes access across a Grand Prix weekend, F1 Experiences offer packages like no other. So to book your F1 Experiences package, head online to f1experiences.com and if you enter code MM11F1E, you'll get 5% off too. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners, so there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.